Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Kathy Hochul, the Lieutenant Governor, joining us live on the line. Kathy, thanks for joining us this morning. Want to begin our discussion just on the unrest around the country and, of course, here in New York State, from Buffalo to Rochester, all the way to New York City. We heard this week the governor say that he stands with the protest. He's outraged. We're all outraged. But I think a lot of people want to know, people in your position at the head of the state, what action is being taken to change some of these things that people have clearly had enough of?
Yeah, thank you for having me on the show again. And that's an excellent question. You know, what changes are necessary? This is really a point of reckoning for our country right now. I think everyone was stunned by the images of an African-American man on the street with a police officer having his knee in his neck for over 9 minutes and stuffing out his life. It was a painful visual for everyone. And the protests that have come forth remind me of what some of the protests were back in the 60s when people were fighting for social justice and civil rights. And that is absolutely protected by our Constitution. I support their right to protest. I've certainly, you know, encouraged people to let the government know what they do. It's protected in the, you know, the founding fathers gave us that right. But when that crosses the line into violence and destruction and people that are trying to agitate and deflect from the real conversation we should be having, those are criminals, and they need to be prosecuted and stopped every step of the way. And so we need to stand with our law enforcement and making sure that those individuals don't hijack legitimate peaceful protests for their own causes and their own purposes. But with respect to how we can advance the agenda of communities of color, which have really been, you know, subjected to discrimination in the criminal justice system. This is not the first incident of an individual being killed at the hands of the police officers. And again, I will say, having been married to a prosecutor for a long time, the vast, vast, vast majority of the police officers are also shocked by what they saw. And they know that that diminishes the uniform that they all proudly wear. And I stand with them. But there will always be bad individuals who need to be dealt with. And one of those ways is to make sure that their records, when there's an investigation, are public, so we know whether this is an isolated incident or is it a pattern of behavior, as we've seen in Minneapolis, where there's been 15, 16 other incidences where no actions were taken. I mean, we have a right to have police officers protecting us who don't cross the line themselves. And again, the vast majority do, but when there's a bad apple, there's an individual who abuses their shield, we need to know about that when there's an investigation. Secondly, we have supported the idea, and it should be nationwide, that when there is a killing at the because of a police officer's action, an individual, a civilian, is killed, there should be an independent investigation outside the district attorney. The truth is the district attorney has a very close relationship with the police department. That's how they prosecute their cases. That's understandable. That's how the work gets done to protect society from criminals. But you have to understand that there is a conflict there that's inherent when a district attorney is asked to prosecute someone that they work with on a regular basis. So we've taken that out of the realm of the district attorney in New York, and we think that that should be nationwide. So these are just two items we should be talking about in the short term, but also making sure that there's more opportunities and better education outcomes. There's a whole host of reforms that should come from this. So this moment in history is not lost, that we could make a seismic change in our attitudes and really just get at the heart of racism, which is behind many of these actions that are occurring right now.
Judging from your response there, Kathy, you would support this effort, this movement to repeal 50A, to make a lot of these disciplinary records for police officers public?
Yes, I think anyone who's a public servant who takes a paycheck from the taxpayers, absolutely, we should know what their record is when they're under investigation for this activity. So I think that the police officers who are doing their job and want to make sure that their reputation are not tarnished by some individuals who abuse their position, they abuse their power, I don't see why anyone would be opposed to this. This is something that I foresee would be happening in the state of New York soon. And the governor believes that there's already the right for police departments to release this information. This is not for everybody. This is simply in the situation where there's an investigation going on as to whether or not this is an isolated incident or whether it's a pattern.
Are you in favor of banning chokeholds and banning excessive force?
I believe that we need to look at that as well, and that we need to, you know, find out what's going on in the various police departments and ask the question, you know, why is this going on? What alternatives are there? And also, I want to know more about, you know, should we be doing more to deal with conflict resolution and ways that we can be smarter about this? And some police departments do an exceptional job, I'm sure. But again, it's a shame that there's individuals who abuse their position. And as we saw in Minneapolis and in other instances around this country, it always seems to be at the, you know, it's a black male who's subjected to this by a white police officer. And there's something there. We have to make sure that we get at the heart of this and protect the reputation of the good cops and make sure that they're not tarnished by this, but also understand that the communities of color are sick and tired of this. I mean, they want to stand up and be heard at this point, and America needs to listen right now.
What we're kind of left with is this situation that it's scary for a lot of people. And what we've heard over the past few days, especially in the city of Buffalo, a lot of parents, a lot of children, very scared at what might happen with some of the violence on the streets. How do we effectively de-escalate the situation from violence while still having these conversations?
That's an excellent observation that we need to make sure that you talk about the children. I was a child in the late 60s, and so my parents let me see the protest. They let me see that this is the greatest country on this planet because we have a right to do this. Our laws, our Constitution protect our right to gather with others and to be able to voice our concerns to government. And that's what this is all about, you know, petitioning our government. Every citizen has that right to do that. And let them see this is democracy in action. Having these conversations now is saying to everyone, to our children who will be dealing with issues like this for the rest of their lives, you have a right to raise these issues. You have a right to be heard. And these conversations should continue in our homes to talk about whether or not there's any inherent, you know, racial biases that are going on in our behavior. And spending more time outside our traditional communities is important to become just socially integrated. And that's something that we don't have a lot of here in Western New York, to be honest with you. And it's something that, you know, when they do national studies of racially diverse communities, Buffalo is not at the top of the list there in terms of the interaction between communities of color and individuals. It's just something that I think we could make a dramatic change in, starting with our own children. And I think that could really make our country prouder. It could make us a better country and make us, you know, look at these conflicts right now and look at the positive that can come out of it, because that's what has to happen. Out of all these protests, there has to be a positive outcome that all Americans will be proud of.
Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul is with us live this morning, and we've been talking about the protests. I want to shift, if we can, to phase two reopening. And many businesses did start opening their doors yesterday, but why did it take so long for the guidance to come out for these phase two businesses? Because some of them said they couldn't reopen yesterday because they weren't ready. They didn't have that guidance in enough time.
You know, I've been saying this for quite some time as I try to get out there, and I've done over 230 interviews to make sure the public knows what's going on. And one of them is that the phase one guidance, I said, would be sort of a barometer of what you should expect for phase two. It wasn't as specific to specific businesses, but I also said you need to know that you're going to have disinfecting protocols. You're going to have social distancing, 6 feet apart. Mark it on the floor of your shop or your salon. That salon owners are going to have to make sure people wear masks and take temperatures. So we have been trying to get out verbally the message, but You're right that the actual guidance did not come out until right beforehand, and so my hope is that we'll be able to get out the phase three protocols earlier. But people who are part of phase three, which could literally be in two more weeks, I mean, those are restaurants and bars. We have been looking intently at the protocols for them as far as developing them with the Restaurant Association, getting a lot of input from individual restaurant owners and trying to let them know what to expect. But I think there's just a basic list of items. It's going to be social distancing. It's going to be mask wearing, temperature taking, and disinfecting.
The possibility for maybe a little more heads up for businesses to let them know, okay, for sure, on this date, we are going to be entering phase two. So I know you mentioned yesterday restaurants, especially looking forward to phase three, hopefully in a couple of weeks, get those plans ready. But is there another way where we can know the day we're entering phase three before, the exact moment it happens when it's announced by the governor?
I would love to be able to give that clarity and that certainty to businesses. Again, I come out of a small business family, and I know exactly the stresses that they're under. But that being said, what the governor does is look at this 14-day period, which is the length of incubation, and if someone was infected, they're going to show up and got very sick. They're going to end up in a hospital in that two-week window. So we monitor activities, like are there more was there going to be a spike in infections following Memorial Day? Was there going to be a spike in infections if people weren't social distancing during protests? We need to reserve the right up until the end of the 14-day period to look at the metrics, but then the governor, just to really make sure we're safe, to make sure that we get it right, he has international epidemiologists who are studying our numbers as well. So the last 24 hours, they literally look at our metrics for a region. That's what happened the last time. And then when they give the okay, we can say go. And it really is at the end of full 14 days. And that's why we'd like to say earlier, people should prepare for it. And you can follow along at forward.ny.gov and watch the trends. But the governor, as you've seen when it came to going to phase one and now into phase two, he's going to allow that decision he made at the very end of that time frame.
Looking at phase two reopening, more people kind of going out and about, maybe returning to offices, a lot of the things we enjoy. And then adding to that what we've seen over the past week with large groups of people. What is the level of concern about the spread going further because of these large gatherings and protests and other settings? And if we don't see a spike in spread, what could that potentially mean for these other phases? Could they be moved up?
You always ask the best questions. We'd love to see them moved up. And certainly, I think I don't foresee phase three being moved up because we are going to have to monitor the impact of these other interactions. But you're absolutely right. We knew that there has to be time frame in between because we have to monitor what happens when we start unleashing more people into society. Think about the difference between phase one and phase two. Most people in Western New York are not working in manufacturing or construction and or else very small little retail. But a lot of people work in offices. A lot of people work in the hair salons and in retail shops throughout their counties. And so we are going to see the introduction of many more people going into leaving the security of their homes, going out, some of them for the first time in a more, different atmosphere than other than just getting their basic necessities. And that could lead to a spike in infections. But it'll only lead to a spike in infections if people go out and don't socially distance and don't wear their masks. If they keep up those two protocols, there's no reason why we shouldn't go into the next phase. But it's not up to me. It's not up to the governor. It's up to the residents of our community and whether or not they're willing to still do what we asked them to do to allow us to get to phase three and then ultimately to phase four. And literally, phase four could be a month away. That is seems like an eternity, but this is a global pandemic. We had no idea when we were in the throes of it, when the number of people dying in New York State was over 800 people a day, and now we're down to 57 people died yesterday, which is still tragic, but what a dramatic decline. Those numbers, the high numbers, could have continued through the entire summer if people in this state did not listen to us and adhere to these social distancing guidelines. So I'm delighted that we're talking about these phases in early and mid-June as opposed to in August or September. So we've made great progress. We just have to keep it up.
Hey, one more before we let you go. The announcement made yesterday, summer day camps are going to reopen on June 29th. A lot of people wondering when that announcement might take place for schools next year, starting in the fall. Do we have any idea of that yet?
The governor had asked all schools, literally kindergarten through college, to present plans to the state by early July on what their reopening plan will look like. How will they accomplish social distancing and the precautions we're going to need? Again, we're not overthinking this. There is very likely a trend that shows a decline in infection over the summer, but based on historical patterns and what we've seen in other countries, it could easily come back, very likely come back in the fall. Now, we're in a far better place. We know all the things we need to do, and I think we're going to be able to manage it much better than when we were first taken by surprise by this earlier this year. But children are very vulnerable. I mean, there was a concern just even a few weeks ago. We started seeing this unusual variation of COVID-19 that was affecting children exclusively, and literally lost the lives of a number of young children. So we're going to be very careful about the schools. Right now, if we head on the path we are and we keep reducing the rate of infection and schools take all the protocols they'll need to do, we'll be able to say that schools will open. But we've not wanted to announce any earlier than necessary the next phase for anything to give us the option just in case circumstances. And I think we'll have a better handle on that in July.
Kathy, we appreciate the time as always. Thank you so much. That's Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul joining us live.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.